This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hey, it's Sprague here. Really appreciate you listening. You're about to get some podcast excellence. It's presented by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Ours is a new love, but it burns very brightly, and it gets hot and sweaty and stanky. There's some stank on that love.
With Andy Dirt Johnson.
You think you're going to find somebody that's going to be like psyched to go to Applebee's with you every Friday night and hear the same football stories about how you rocked in high school?
I did rock in high school football. You want to check tape?
And Brendan Sprague.
You know about the cup sizes and all?
Yeah, different cups.
Yeah, I know about the cup.
You got the A, the B. The C, the D, that's the biggest.
I know the D is the biggest. I based my whole life on knowing that the D is the biggest.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Hey, let's do this. Final hour, Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. Thanks for being with us on a Thursday. Thursday night football coming up tonight. Fired up for it. Got game 4 of the Western Conference Finals. Our teams are slated to play. If the postseason started today.
Bring it on, bitch.
Bring it on. Be like 2010 all over again. Just a decade later.
Or it'd be like 1996. I actually don't know if they played in 96.
I don't think they did.
I don't think the Giants were in the playoffs.
You guys were terrible
in the 90s.
Yeah.
We were just good at getting there and then
losing. You got
losing.
There, man. You got there a whole bunch. You're there all the time.
Hey, we got one.
You got one.
We won one out of like 15.
Oh, the sprint to the end of baseball. I'm fired up for it.
That would be a lot of fun because... easily, my team would be favored over yours.
Oh, the heavy, heavy favorites.
But yeah. Your team would probably beat ours because we're nothing but disappointments and we have no pitching staff.
The other fun part will be, because all 3 games would be played in Atlanta, they'll probably be going on during the show.
Oh, they'd be going on during the show, sure.
And I'd be going, Dirt, who is Buff McGruff? And why has he got
Why is he hitting home runs? BS, man. Yeah, that would be a lot of fun. We'll see. Giants winning right now. I got the game on 3-1. They're trying to hold on. They're, I think, in the 7th seed right now. But it's going to be fun last week of Major League Baseball. But before we do any of that, let's get to the Pro Football Challenge.
It's time for a predictive little trip around the National Football League.
Simple plays executed with a maximum of effort.
Game by game, our hosts are ready to make their picks. And we know how that usually goes.
Well, I think we do a decent job for guys who suck.
The Pro Football Challenge with Dirt and Spray. Brought to you by Warren Allen Attorneys at Law. Injured? Don't trust just anyone to something so personal. Call George McCoy at Warren Allen. Online at warrenallen.com.
Today I'm laying the big wood.
The Pro Football Challenge on 1080.
It's go time, yo.
The Fan.
Cut that meat. Cut that meat. Let's make some NFL picks, shall we?
Randy.
How many weeks in a row do I need to remind people how we're doing it and what the format is? You got it yet?
No.
We'll keep going a couple more weeks?
No, I've had random tweets every now and then. I had a tweet over the weekend said, hey, Sprague, I haven't caught the show in a couple weeks.
You guys still on the air?
It's like, oh, I don't... That kind of hurts my feelings when you admit that, but sure.
Still here, man. We're still here. We're still doing shows.
Contrary to the popular opinion that we should be fired, we're still operating a radio show.
We're still surviving, baby. We're cockroaches. They can't get rid of us. Here's how we're doing it this year. Pro Football Challenge. We are asking listeners to submit games at the beginning of the show. And the first 3 that get texted in, we end up writing them down. And then we get to them at 2 o'clock. And we were picking them against the spread this year. So the first 3 games, send them in. We pick them against the spread. Here's where we're at 2 weeks into the season. You, Brandon Sprague, and you, Jason Swigart, are tied for the lead. At a mighty 3-3. You know what they call that?
Not losing money. Hey-o.
What did we do last week?
I am 2-4, by the way. You both went 2-1. I went 1-2. We all three took the Vikings because, you know, we're idiots.
I also warned us, and we still went that way.
The warn was there. We all won on the Rams, and then my dumbass took Washington to cover against Arizona, and you both took the Cardinals. So you went 2-1. I went 1-2. You both are 3-3. I am 2-4.
Okay.
Epic comeback starts right now. First game will start in the Great Northwest. Seattle at home, 2-0 on the season. Crazy game on Sunday night as they are now welcoming in Jason Swigard's Dallas Cowboys off of their historic comeback against Atlanta. This game in Seattle again on Sunday. Let me pull up the old line here.
Is it 6.5?
It is currently at 6. Seahawks favored by 6.
I'm going to take the Dallas Cowboys here, Bob. Look, I have no doubt the Seahawks can win. Probably should win this game. Mm-hmm. Dallas is showing last week before their epic comeback was pretty pathetic. Their defense isn't extraordinary, but I'll say this. Seattle's defense looked just as bad. We just didn't talk about it because they beat Bill Belichick and the Patriots. No pass rush unless Jamal Adams comes down. Everybody is riding the Hawks right now. Russell Wilson, I'm assuming, will play well. But I think Zeke's going to get it going, and I liked what I saw from Dak. He was a big reason they won that game. I will take those points because I think this is going to be a close contest. It always seems to be between these two teams. Give me the Cowboys plus the 6.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to take those points. Okay. Towards the end there when Dallas was forced to throw it all over the yard, Dak went back and started ripping it with those three receivers. The Seahawks don't have enough guys to cover those three. So, and hopefully the Cowboys have a chance to figure out something at the tight end position that's useful because that guy's going to be left alone pretty much. They can't generate a pass rush, as Sprague mentioned. So this is going to be a field goal game. I don't have any faith that the Cowboys defense can stop Russell Wilson. So unless there are significant turnovers that give one team far more possessions or short fields than the other, that I see this as a field goal game.
You know, the one sleeper guy that I'm keeping an eye on this week is what's their rookie, the linebacker's name? Brooks?
Oh, Jordan Brooks.
Jordan Brooks that they drafted. People are raving about him maybe being an edge rusher. He didn't play a ton in the first 2 weeks, thinking he could fill a role there. I know they used him late in the game against New England because they, again, couldn't generate any form of a pass rush. That's not going to change. I do know that Dallas' defense is not very good. They gave up 39 points. I know part of that was their offense handing them crappy situations with turnovers, but they didn't force any turnovers. They gave up 40 points at home to Atlanta. Russell Wilson's going to pick these guys apart. I think it's going to be a back-and-forth game, and Dallas should be throwing the ball more. I would hope that they learned that late in the game against Atlanta, but I don't trust them, and I don't trust Kellen Moore. So I'm going to take the Seahawks. I think it's a close game. 35-28, 31-24, somewhere in that range. I'll take Seattle to win by a touchdown. Next one up in the Pro Football Challenge. Oh, by the way, one other note I wanted to add. And this is partly because of the scores and the way the games are at. Seattle's defense is terrible, but through 2 weeks, did you know there's only one team that's giving up fewer rushing yards per game than them? And it's Pittsburgh.
Hmm.
They're only giving up 69, nice, yards per game on the ground.
Nice.
Okay, part of that is the game situation. They were up big against Atlanta. Atlanta had to throw. They had a lead for the most game against New England.
Well, I was going
to
say, you're also playing two teams that you don't look at New England without James White and think power running team. You don't look at Atlanta and think power running team. I think that's some of that's predicated on the opponent.
Very true. All right, next one up, Chicago 2-0. They came back to beat Detroit in week one. Oof. Last week, they survived a scare against the Giants at home. They are on the road against the mighty, mighty Atlanta Falcons, who were 0-2 after getting blown out by Seattle and blowing the lead last week to Dallas. Atlanta, riddle me this, a 3-point favorite in this game.
Yikes. Let the record state. I don't know if I'm going to win or lose this game. I am not ever going to put money on this matchup. Look, this is really just one of those throw it out there. You have no idea what turns up, if it's Falcons or Bears, but you kind of get lucky either way.
Yeah.
Atlanta's defense is pretty awful. And Mitch Trubisky, he's been okay. I'm not going to give him... He has. Let's be fair. He's been okay. He hasn't been awful.
Yeah, he ripped the Giants for 17 points at home last week. Great effort.
I am going to take the Bears and the points because I do not trust Atlanta's defense. No Julio Jones potentially, although Calvin Ridley had a monster game against Dallas. What the hell? Let's go with more dogs. Give me those points.
Yep.
I'm going to take the points too. How's Atlanta going to stop? I don't, and if they don't have Julio Jones, they can't run the football. I don't know what. I don't know why. I mean, just the home field advantage. But
if them being a favorite makes no sense.
I think it does.
Really? Chicago is 2-0?
You can score on Chicago, and you get to Mitch Trubisky. Can that team do anything?
As long as
you blitz the living hell out of that kid?
As long as Trubisky doesn't hand it to Atlanta on a short field. Yeah, what's Atlanta going to do to stop them?
This could be a separation Sunday, boys. I'm riding with the Falcons. Give me the Dirty Birds. They're at home. Them being favored is terrifying. I would never gamble on them actually needing 3 points to win.
There's a reason for it. We said this about there the Colts is. Last weekend.
Like, what's going on here? Look, Atlanta's terrible. Dan Quinn should probably get fired. But this, like, Mitchell Trubisky is good and the Bears look good stuff is cracking me up, man. They were getting blown out, and it took a miracle comeback against Detroit to win that game. And last week, they darn near blew a lead at home. They were up to, what, 17? Nothing at that game, and they didn't score a point in the second half against the Giants, who might be one of the worst teams in the NFL this year. I'm not buying it. I think there's talent on that roster, but until they get Nick Foles in there, I'm not buying the offense. I'm going to take Atlanta to win. I think they can score some points. Give me the Falcons and a close win at home. Last but not least, another team that is 0-2 and incredibly disappointing against a 2-0 team that has looked pretty decent. Pittsburgh is at home against Houston. 2-0 Steelers, 0-2 Texans. Pittsburgh is favored by 4.
Yeah, this line's interesting because it's dropped a little bit. It actually opened at 6, and I think it was at 6 on Monday, and then it started coming in. I actually like Houston here. Haven't been all that impressed. You know, Pittsburgh got a good win against the Giants on opening weekend. I was pretty disappointed to see Jeff Driskel just light them up and allow Denver to kind of sneak back into that ball game. I think Pittsburgh wins, but I think it's a field goal game. I think Houston's going to respond to being 0-2. Deshaun is so talented. And say what you want about Bill O'Brien. You know I'm no fan. I like them in this spot. It's going to be weird if they fall to 0-3. I'm going to bank on Deshaun Watson and company here, getting some more chemistry with those wideouts. Give me Houston plus the 4.
I'm going to lay the 4 points. Mike Tomlin, pretty serious with this, guys. He brought officials into practice trying to clean up the penalties.
Oh, did he really?
So I think he understands how big it would be for his Steelers to get to 3-0 and how much of a leg up that they would have. They're also going to get their Pro Bowl right guard David DeCastro back, so they might be able to run a little bit more and control the clock. Really like what Connor and Snell provide as a combination. Nobody's got to really carry it 30, 35 times.
Snell's been fun.
Snell's been a great addition. And Bill O'Brien will screw something up at some point for the Texans, and I think Pittsburgh wins by touchdown.
Yeah, I think I can trust one of these teams, and I can't trust the other, and that's why I'm going to go with Pittsburgh. Although I will say for Houston, they clearly are not in the same class as the better teams in the NFL, but how many teams would be 0-2 with blowout losses if they had to play Kansas City and Baltimore in the first 2 weeks? That's the only gray area I'm in with them, and I think this is the big determination because right. Kansas City and Baltimore are clearly, at least to this point, the two best teams it looks like in the league. I know Green Bay's look good. Seattle's look good. They've gotten boat raced. But again, those are two. It's not like they got boat raced by the Bears and the Giants in the first 2 weeks. They've lost to the Chiefs and the Ravens. But I just feel like I could trust Pittsburgh more at this point, and they're at home, so I'll take the Steelers.
I think, to me, the Houston point is not about losing. It's about, yeah, you're not Baltimore, you're not Kansas City, but the expectation is not to lose by 20 points to these two teams and get embarrassed.
Yeah, it hasn't been good.
They've never been close.
There we go. Pro Football Challenge every Thursday at 2 o'clock. We pick the Dallas, Seattle, Atlanta, Chicago, and Houston, Pittsburgh games. And we got a chance for some separation, some different picks this week. I like it. So we'll see. Reminder, Sprague and Swag through 2 weeks are 3-3, and I am at 2-4. Right, let's get to the Pac-12 and some college football stuff coming up next. Just revisit where we're at as the vote is upcoming later on today. We have a couple of poll questions that I want to get to. I'm curious where listeners reside on it. Also, the NLI legislation that potentially could be heading our way, courtesy of the U.S. government. We'll get to all that coming up next on The Fan. Well, it's going to end up being a big day for the Pac-12. We opened the show there, and we're continuing to wait. For those who have not seen what's going on or heard what's going on, there will be a meeting that starts at 3 o'clock today, a Zoom meeting of the Pac-12 presidents and chancellors, and a vote is expected at some point this evening, so we should have an answer. We're kind of expecting around 5 o'clock tonight for exactly what the plan is going to be. Maybe a little bit later than that. Who knows how long it goes. Starts at 3 o'clock, and it's going to continue into the evening. The looming issue, there was one positive news and one negative news today. Yeah, the positive was that the California health officials committed to expanding cohorts to a workable number for football practice, basically allowing them to practice at, expanding the numbers that can get together, which was big news. The bad news was the issue out of Colorado when we went there on the Daily Ticker today, if you missed it, where their gatherings have been limited for the next 2 weeks, and it will affect the football program. But it has been reported that they have some contingency plans in place. But it has been an interesting day, to say the least, in the conference. And now we wait for the news tonight of what exactly the answer will be.
Well, we kind of assume and we feel like we know what the answer is. I do worry just a slight bit because it's the Pac-12. If something like this pops up, does it get the presidents and chancellors to reconsider? I highly doubt it would, but you worry about it because of the Pac-12. I actually wonder about the scheduling. If they're 2 weeks behind, maybe their contingency is that we're going to do Zoom. We're going to do like small, I don't even know what the gathering numbers right. are, but if you get two right. or three kids, you do something like that. If they're willing to say, yep, despite our 2 week kind of break here, we're still going to prepare and be ready to play on November 7th. All right. But that doesn't seem like a good position to kind of put your student athletes in, right? This is all about student athlete wellness, and they're playing during the pandemic. And then if Colorado gets by and they say, we're going to play November 7th, despite not playing for 2 weeks, that's
right.
I don't know, it's a bit hypocritical in that sense, but I think overall you worry about the scheduling, because if you have one team that is basically behind, what do you do with the others in the South, or what do you do with them in the North? Good luck. And this is kind of what every conference has dealt with to a certain extent. Houston still hasn't been able to play. They've had like 4 or 5 games postponed or canceled because of COVID. You've seen ACC teams deal with this, the Big 12. This is kind of what you have to go through when you play during a global pandemic. And, you know, you shrug your shoulders and say it is what it is. But how does that impact the Pac-12? With Colorado potentially being 2 weeks behind everybody else, they might, and they probably will, say, yeah, go ahead, put us on the schedule for November 7th. We'll just deal with it. That's going to be a big advantage for whoever they play. And you're right. just hoping that it's your favorite team, because you imagine that's going to impact Colorado.
You would think, right? Now, how do you guys feel if this ends up being a looming issue about the potential of leaving a program behind?
You know, I'm kind of already in the assumption they're going to do that, that there's going to be programs that might encounter COVID stuff within their counties, within their universities. And I don't think it's any different than other conferences are dealing with, right? It's basically going to be every man for themselves, and if they can't go, they can't go, move on to the next game. But if you're doing a conference only schedule, this has to be a concern, because it doesn't just impact one program.
Right. Somebody else has a bye every week.
Exactly. And you worry about what that does, kind of the fairness quality of it. I know it's only 6 or 7 games, so maybe nobody really cares what the end result of the conference is, but that's an element I think you have to take into consideration, is how it impacts the other schools who don't get hit by this COVID stuff versus the schools who may have to take a week or two off.
Yeah, I don't know. I think this year is just so wacky. As long as whatever revenue comes in that's traditionally split between all the schools remains to be split between all the schools, regardless if you're playing or not, then I do whatever you got to do.
Right.
Like, even
the minute you start monkeying around or reorganizing how money gets distributed is when you create problems.
Yeah.
I mean, let me walk you down this scenario. It's entirely possible, right? Oregon, Washington are playing week 4, whatever it is. I don't know what the schedule is going to be. And Washington was scheduled to play Arizona. Arizona got COVID. They're shutting it down for a week. Washington doesn't have a game. Oregon plays that weekend, and they both go through clear for COVID the next week. Washington got a bye.
Yeah, right.
Oregon fans not going to care about that. Oregon fan absolutely will. And if it was on, the shoe was on the other foot, that fan base would care about it. I think you are going, there's a chance you encounter that. And, you know, again, it kind of is what it is during the pandemic. Other conferences are already dealing with this. Yeah. You're going to have to just shrug your shoulders and say, that's life. That's kind of what you deal with.
Yeah, I think it's a big test for the conference, because they feel like they've been in a pretty lockstep of saying, we're not going to leave somebody behind. It's all 12 or none of them at all.
Yeah.
But now that it's like push comes to shove. This is your night. And to have that Colorado news break, I think the main question first is, what is the contingency plan? Are there ways that you can safely take the kids out of the county so you're not worrying about breaking those stay-at-home orders that are in place now for at least 2 weeks? It might extend past 2 weeks. We don't know how long it's going to go on for. It's just at least for 2 weeks. It could turn into a month if the cases continue to pile up in Boulder, but can you take them out of the county, play them somewhere, go to Denver? I don't know where the hell you would go, but go somewhere where it's allowed so you can get your practice in. And then once it's lifted, you would hope by the start of the season, you'd be ready to go by Halloween. I thought it was good news, at least, that they said they were not caught off guard by this.
Yeah, they had contingencies for it.
They have contingencies, but that's going to be a big thing, I think, for the president tonight is, okay, what's your plan here, Colorado? How are you planning on executing this, and can it be done successfully? Because as you mentioned, the schedule, I think, is the biggest issue of if you schedule them, you schedule a 7-week season and they're not ready to go the first 2-3 weeks of the year, that throws everything out of whack. And you're going to have teams that only end up playing 5 games this year or 6 games. It's going to put you behind the eight ball before the season even begins.
Well, and to the name, image, likeness story that came out too with the legislation proposed and backed by some representatives, I think it part of that storyline is involved with this. You can say Boulder County's dealing with COVID. It extends 3 weeks. And you hope it does, and you hope this kind of dies down and they can get their numbers in check. But if it does, I mean, you're saying the quiet thing out loud, and I think everybody's kind of thinking it. Can you go somewhere else? Can you go to Denver? Right. Can you bubble to a different county? I mean, sure you can. But that's when you start to have to kind of run into the conversation about paying players. Otherwise, you're telling university students they can't be together and they can't do this, they can't do that. And then you're taking a select group of student athletes and you're saying, go play football.
Right.
Because we need to recoup, I don't know, whatever, however right. many millions it ends up being for them. That's when the name, image, likeness, the money, the salary stuff, like that's why that conversation is always looming, is because those other conversations about bubble football exist with college students.
Yeah, you mentioned the name, image, likeness stuff. There was a bill introduced today by Anthony Gonzalez and Emmanuel Cleaver. Gonzalez, a Republican from Ohio, Cleaver, a Democrat from Missouri. Is that Missouri? That's from Missouri, right? That is a national legislation for name, image, likeness for college sports. They released a statement saying these are the things that everybody's going to see that they like, some that they like and some that they wish were different. But I think that that's a sign of a good bill. Frankly, that's the hallmark of a bipartisan bill. It's never everything that any one individual or one group wants. It's always a collaboration. The bill, if you have not had a chance to look through it, there's a number of things in here because this has been a looming issue. It's coming to college athletics. It's just a matter of when. It would allow student athletes to have endorsement contracts and representatives to solicit or negotiate such arrangements. Yeah, you can have agents. The bill has no prohibition against endorsement arrangements that would conflict with schools' scholarship or sponsorship agreements. It bars boosters from providing any funds to them. So basically, you can't be a big booster and do that kind of stuff.
And I think that's the reassuring part for programs. If you were to compare, you know, Alabama to Missouri, Alabama is probably going to have so many different avenues to have these booster checks to give them.
Right.
And you don't want to have that. Otherwise, you're going to have even more dysfunction or separation, I should say, between the haves and the have-nots in college football. I'm sure there's some programs going to try and chance it and get bigger paychecks than publicized. That's what college sports can be from time to time. But I think that's encouraging. That's a pretty big part of this, is that you limit, you know, where you're going and how you're going about it.
Yeah, you can't do tobacco, vaping, alcohol, marijuana, gambling, adult entertainment. You can't do any of that kind of stuff, although those ads would be hilarious if you could. They're not going to allow that. You can't wear any item of clothing or gear with an insignia or an entity during an athletic competition, during a university-sponsored event. So
Penn A. Sewell here for Lady of the Night.
Right, so there's certain limitations what you can do. I think one of the parts of it that I like the most, first, they wanted something nationally and federally, and this would basically eliminate the state-by-state laws that have been passed, because you've seen, I don't know how many we got up to, 15, 20, whatever it was, where states say, here's our protocols. This would eliminate that and basically say, here's your federal mandate. This is what it's going to look like. They also said that the bill, the enforcement of all of this and the wrongdoing of athletes and the questions, all that kind of stuff, it would be handled by the Federal Trade Commission, not the NCAA. So I kind of like that. So if you got to complain, if you think somebody's cheating, somebody's getting too much money under the table, it would not be an issue that's handled by the NCAA. It would be handled by the Federal Trade Commission.
You know, this part too popped up, and I think this is interesting because I think this could potentially happen. The proposed law does not include any restrictions about athletes signing deals with the competitors of companies that sponsor schools.
That's unique.
That means, for example, an athlete who attends a school with a Nike contract, yeah, see Oregon or OSU here, would be allowed to sign an endorsement deal with Under Armour, but he or she wouldn't have the right to wear Under Armour apparel,
yes,
during games or school-sponsored events. But summertime, springtime,
go ahead,
we want you to do something with Under Armour. You absolutely could go do ahead. It, and I'm sure you could probably even get a little wiggle room
to get like green and yellow gold
right.
Under Armour gear. You just have no affiliation with logos or anything.
Yeah, to a lesser extent, it kind of it's what happens in the NBA, right? Like, look at the NBA. You got Nike swooshes all over every gear of NBA clothing, and Damian Lillard's an Adidas guy, but he wears Nike jerseys when he plays.
Well, I think that's a good example, too. They do red and black color schemes with stuff, right? Or you could even go with hyper-local stuff. Bobby Wagner does this. He wears, and I've seen him a couple times, he does these Stop Freaking Call Beacon Plumbing.
Right.
It's some company up in the Seattle area. His commercials up there play, and he's not wearing any team-affiliated thing, but it's like a green and dark blue tracksuit. Yeah. So you get the idea, hey, Bobby Wagner here, the Seahawks. Stop Freaking Call Beacon.
Yeah, that was a great ad. So there is an update on what's going on with the Pac-12. We'll know more tonight. Just keep it here on the Fan. Isaac Atsouk, I'm sure, will be all over it. They're starting their meeting coming up here in about a half hour. A vote expected at some point this evening. On a return-to-play plan, the most expected continues to be some form of hybrid with some teams starting on Halloween and some teams starting the Saturday after that on November 7th. But we were all TBD until we get the official announcement tonight. We got Thursday football coming up tonight. We're fired up for it. How do you feel about the game? Are you excited? What are your thoughts on Minshew? We'll get to that. Also, Game 4 of the Western Conference Finals. Did the Lakers bounce back or does Denver even this one up? We'll get to all that coming up in the next half hour. But hey, welcome back in. You want a fun fact?
I love a fun fact.
Do you like fun facts?
Yeah.
What you got?
So I didn't see this yesterday, and I'm assuming that it's official because Major League Baseball posted about it. But
I got another fun fact I can give you.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
For the 20th consecutive season in Major League Baseball, we will not have a repeat champion.
That's right.
Were the Nationals eliminated
Nats
yesterday?
Nats officially eliminated.
Okay.
Which, if you're a Nats fan, you're probably kind of pissed, right? Because you're like, well, we got almost 60 games before we turned it around, and here we are this year.
This is when we got hot last year, baby.
Yeah.
They were just getting ready to go. But that kind of, that sunk in a little bit. For a 90s era in which it felt like the Yankees won 13 World Series, to now have 20 consecutive years. You've had repeat winner. Boston has won four. The Cardinals have won a couple. The Yankees have won again. The Giants, of course, have won three. But you've never, since the turn of the century, you've not had a back-to-back World Series champion, and that will continue for 20 years.
Yeah. That's a good fun fact.
I thought that was a pretty good fun fact.
I like it.
Do you have a fun fact, too?
You know, I looked it up, and I'm not as convinced it's an actual fact.
Oh, you think it's not a real fact?
It was a fun fact when I read it.
Okay.
And then the backstory may diminish that fact part.
Okay.
I saw a thing and it said it was a random Manute Bol thing.
Uh-huh.
And it said, fun fact, did you know Manute Bol created the term my bad? And I thought, what?
Huh?
I read it and the explanation was that Manute Bol, when he came over to play basketball, he was at practices and because of the language barrier, he didn't say my fault when he made a mistake. He always just said my bad. And
it
caught on, but.
You know what? I'm taking that as a fun fact. That's a counties for me.
Yeah, then I looked it up, but I'm not as convinced.
I saw somebody, I think it was the World Wide Web guy, tweeting when Anthony Davis hit the game winner. Like, why is Bol Bol not in the game there? Get his gangly ass out on the floor guarding the inbounds pass.
I'd love to see him get more minutes for his, just basically for his fouls, but I also understand why Mike Malone doesn't play him as much.
Let's get to that. As game four is tonight, the Lakers, I guess, submitted a complaint to the NBA about not getting enough foul calls. Is this true? I saw a headline that said that they were
not getting enough?
The Lakers submitted a complaint. I thought I saw a headline that read that.
Well, I think for the first time, the Nuggets shot more free throws.
Oh, how? That is just unfathomable.
Yeah.
Well,
just stop.
Do we know for certain they did file that? I think this is a Manute Bol fun fact.
That was a fun fact. I saw it.
It gets thrown out there. The Lakers. You hate the Lakers, so it's red meat. Everybody piles on.
I'll search on that. But what are we expecting tonight? Anthony Davis, it's weird to say he disappeared a bit, even though he had, 28 points, whatever it was, in Game 3, but not the same effect that he had in Game 2. Where are we at?
If they play defense from the start of the game, they did when they made that big comeback to make it a game. If they can play defense that way the whole time, then I would expect the Lakers to win. By how much depends on which Danny Green shows up.
If you Dude, get, That's a whole other thing. Has he had one good game in the entire bubble where he's been on fire from three?
I can't think of a
moment. I thought he had one against, wasn't there one against the Blazers where like the whole bench was making everything?
I'll look it up, but I don't know if there's ever been a more hot and cold shooter maybe in league history than him. He is absolutely the guy that can go 3 weeks without making more than two. And then also set the NBA Finals record for most made in a game.
So this comes from CBS Sports. Sam Quinn wrote the piece yesterday evening, it appears. The headline reads, Lakers present case to NBA saying LeBron James is not getting enough free throw attempts. Per report, he's only attempted 10 free throws in the first three games of the Western Conference Finals. So they have presented a case to the league saying that they need to get more foul calls and they feel like they have a legitimate argument.
Yeah, here's the thing with him.
I think any team can make that argument.
I think, there's a lot to that. He is kind of, unfortunately for him, he falls into the Shaq category.
That is such BS.
He's not easy to officiate. He also doesn't do himself service by bitching about every single missed shot that he thinks he was fouled on. And then he stands back and he's always late to defense.
Is there any way to get that out of the NBA?
They need to dedicate more training and resources to the referees. I'm convinced they're the least effective of the Big Four. And it's hard with the NFL because they rescinded their full-time referee thing. So it's kind of hard.
Right.
Because they're still part-time, and especially with COVID, and now who knows how much they're getting together, and they're trying to send them video things or whatever. But overall, especially with a lot of the veteran guys in the NBA who used to, they would talk to players early on. And if you go back into the 80s, the officials, they would have running conversations with guys, especially like the big men back when they used to wrestle, and they tell them, it's like, get your hands off. I'm going to start blowing whistles. We're not doing that tonight. They would talk to him early on and tell him what they were going to allow and say, if you guys don't stop this, I'm going to start blowing the whistle on this.
Well, what was last night? Did you see that Butler tapped the ball out of Tatum's hands late?
I saw that,
and it clearly went off Tatum. So they won the review, and then the decision was a jump ball, and it clearly went off Tatum.
Just give the ball to Miami in that moment? That was a great play by Jimmy Butler in that moment.
It was, and I actually thought he did it again, but they called a foul on him, and they couldn't review it again. I thought he did it twice. They've done that a couple times where they've concluded that the challenge was right and they just go with a jump ball instead of ruling who the ball went off of.
It might have, if there was a foul called and they said there wasn't a foul, it might be a specific review rule, then it goes to a jump ball.
They got to change that. That's terrible. That should have been Miami ball, not a jump ball.
And Boston ended up winning the jump ball, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, they did.
Tatum beat them.
You know, on that too, Swag, I think the full-time official things is a big problem. I also think... it is my opinion. I think it's harder to officiate these players than it's ever been. Everybody is super athletic, super lengthy. Guys are bigger. So you get like LeBron and Jeremy Grant meeting at the rim. Do you call a foul there?
Right.
Do you give LeBron the benefit?
Not easy.
Grant. And so I'm not trying to make all the excuses for him. I think there are a lot of circumstances
I still think there's a lot in the NBA of anticipating the play.
Sure. I hate the one I hate the most, and I've seen this in the Lakers series and Miami. It drives me nuts when the ref is clearly waiting for the end of what the shot is before calling the foul.
That went in about five years ago.
They miss the bucket and you get the late whistle.
As soon as the bucket's missed, it's a foul. But if it went in, you know he's not calling that foul. That is dog crap. And by the way, Danny Green, to his credit in my face, it says he's shooting 36% from three in the postseason.
What? Yeah.
He did have a good game against Houston. He was 4 of 6 in one game, and he did have a good game against Portland in the one you're referencing. He was 3 of 4. And that's Danny Green in a nutshell. I feel like every time he shoots a three, it is clanking. He looks like a guy that has no confidence.
But if the Lakers will commit to defense from the start of the game the way they did in that second half comeback, and they can find a couple of guys, whether it's a Morris or... you know, maybe at some point, if they need an offensive burst, get J.R. Smith in there, something, if they can get enough guys.
Did you just say they need an offensive burst?
J.R., baby.
No, but I mean, they couldn't make anything in that first half.
They shot 23% as a team from three for the game, and that's considering how bad their first half was.
You know that meme with JR squinting?
Yeah, I love that one.
That's what I just did when Swagger said, they're looking offensive burst. I'd be like, what?
What the hell's going on here,
I think
man?
They're going to win. They didn't show up defensively in the last game until too late.
To me, it's on Anthony Davis.
Yes.
Anthony Davis had 2 rebounds in 43 minutes.
Yep.
Explain to me how that's possible. He's maybe the most freakish athlete in the entire NBA to have 2 rebounds in a game. You luck your way into 5.
I was going back and forth between that game and the Sun. That was Sunday?
It was game.
It was between the
Sunday. The Monday night game.
Yeah.
The Monday night football game game. So was he guarding Jokic a lot? Because if he guards Jokic a lot and Jokic is out top, it's easy for him to drift out and not go in and get rebounds.
He did, and then Dwight took his fair share of reps against him because Dwight's trying to do this thing where he gets in his head, but it's not working.
Not working at all.
But Jokic had some of his more skilled / lucky shots. Like
A couple of those like fadeaway 19-footers off of 1 foot. It's nothing but net.
Goes way up. You're like, oh, he's going to miss, and it just drains right through the net. I'll say this about Davis. He has to show up in a big way. They all acknowledged it in postgame. They didn't attack the glass. Denver out-rebounded them. Davis has got to try to get Jokic in foul trouble.
It was 44-25.
Yeah, they got beat
on the boards.
Bad on the boards. Jeremy Grant was a big part of that as well.
Yeah, he had a great game.
AD and Jokic, you can argue about who you think is the better player, and I do think it's a good argument. AD has the ability to get him in foul trouble, and he's just, I don't know, man. He likes to settle sometimes for that perimeter shot a little much. He's really good from the mid-range, as we saw against Portland, but he's got the ability. They need to get him in foul trouble. If Jokic is going to be clean and he's dealing with like 2 or 3 fouls going into the fourth, you're probably looking at a pretty tight game yet again because of how talented and good him and Murray are as a duo. But I think L.A. does what Miami does. We have a closer game tonight, but I think L.A. is going to go up 3-1.
Yeah, Anthony Davis, by the way, game one had 37-10, and then game two he had 31-9, and he hit the game-winning 3, of course. Yeah. So he could play better than that. That's a big one for them tonight. We'll keep an eye on it. Game 4, excited for it. Western Conference Finals. Hopefully Denver can pull off another upset and extend that series a little bit because we already got a 3-1 series going on in the Eastern Conference. We'll answer the poll questions and wrap things up with some Thursday Night Football. We'll do it next on The Fam. Can afford a thing on TV. Good point from Ralph Russo on Twitter I saw during the break. Friend of the show. I think we've had him on before.
I wouldn't call him a friend.
Not a friend, no. Did he spurn us once?
Well, we got him on once, and then the last 2 times I've tried, he won't respond.
Well, we've been wondering what the Pac-12 is going to do, their decision coming tonight. I floated it earlier, like, if you're this delayed, you got to worry about Colorado. Why don't you just play a full season? You know, kind of, you're not going to make the playoff anyways. Just screw it. Let's go play a full season.
Yeah, but then punting on the playoff would piss people off even more because everybody gets mad about everything now.
They do. And then somebody said the perception will be bad. And I said, well, what's the perception if you play a 5-game season and you don't make the playoff? You think people are going to be singing our praises at that point?
That's kind of I said this a while ago. It's a lose-lose for the conference.
Right.
Like, it's a win in the sense of they can recoup some money and we get to see football for our teams. But if they don't make the playoff and they only play 6 games,
your best team's 4-2.
Guess what's going to happen? We're going to get made fun of again. It almost really is a no-win situation.
Can't even make it to 6-game season.
Right. Yeah. Or they'll be like, oh, yeah, 6-0. Pac-12's weak, though. Can't make the playoff. Right.
Well, to that note, this is valid, and it's the reason the Pac-12 is doing what they're doing. Russo reminding folks, and this is something that's good to remind people of, even if the Pac-12 champion does not qualify for the college football playoff this year, and you're going to crown a champ, whether it's 6 games, whatever, you're guaranteed a spot in a New Year's 6 bowl game, and that is a $4 million paycheck.
Are those are still happening?
They're still scheduled to happen. We don't know about the rest of the bowl games down the slate, but the New Year's 6 is still scheduled to happen because it's a part of the college football playoff agreement. So that's a $4 million check. Also, the Power 5 conferences each get a $66 million check from the college football playoff annually, whether your team's selected or not. So as long maybe you wouldn't get that if you had a different season, whatever. But if you're playing and you're vying for it, you end up getting $66 million for the conference and a $4 million check for a New Year's 6 bowl game, which you're guaranteed to have.
Well, and I know bowl games have been a little vague and we don't really know the full story to them yet. Dusty asked this morning. What is the bowl threshold now? If you play 6 games, can you be 3-3 you have to be, or above 500?
Yeah. I think it comes down to how many bowl games will be played. And once you figure out how many bowl games will be played, then you can figure out your threshold.
Well, I also wonder if it's about how many bowl games are in certain states.
For sure. Yeah.
Florida, Texas.
Yeah. What states are going to allow them, what states aren't, what states will allow fans, that kind of stuff. I mean, you're looking at, you know, December-ish usually being bowl season, some in January, and you know, that's going to be maybe slightly delayed this year, but that, I think, is the big question, is just how many of those want to go forward with having a game? Because if they all happen, then I think the threshold's, you know, a 500 season like it usually is. 6-6 usually gets you in.
So we're celebrating 3-3 this year?
3-3, baby. Let's go. Well, that would just be for us. You'd have some conferences that are 5-5 going to a bowl game if you played 10. But, yeah.
Well, what conferences are playing 10?
The SEC's planning on playing 10.
Oh, they're doing the 9-conference, 1-title game?
No, they're doing. I think they're doing a 10-conference game schedule plus a conference championship game.
Oh, man, I didn't. I was thinking they were doing something else.
Let me pull it
up. I'm an idiot.
Yeah, I believe they're trying to play 10. I think the ACC's trying to play 10. They're doing like a 9+1 model, 9-conference games and a non-conference game.
Well, if they decide to do 6 tonight or 7, either way, I would like them to do what the Big Ten's proposing to do. You get to your conference championship game, whoever the hell that may be, and everybody else should get to play one more kind of send-off game, and if you want to do it by who's 2 in the north, who's 2 in the south, or whatnot, then do it that way. But I think every team deserves to have one more game. We'll just know that the Pac-12 title game will know that difference, and you should give the other teams that opportunity to at least play 7, maybe 8 games, depending on what their schedule is tonight.
Yeah, SEC playing an all-conference 10-game season. That's what their schedule. At least that's what their schedule to play. Some won't end up playing 10, obviously.
Well, that starts this weekend.
That starts this weekend. I had a listener that texted, or we had a listener that texted yesterday, and it was something I hadn't thought about yet. So the Big Ten has announced they're coming back, obviously, you know the schedule and all that stuff. Rondale Moore, by the way, at Purdue announced he's opting back in today.
The speedster.
The speedster from Purdue. If the Pac-12 announces the same, what do you do with the polling? Like the coaches poll and the AP poll that come out on Monday, are we allowed to be in that or do we got to wait until we play a game?
Yeah, this is an interesting point I've seen with Ohio State too.
Right. Do you put them back in the top 10?
Yeah, they were in it and then they got taken out.
Right.
And then when they were announced, I think they got voted back in.
Or are they back in the poll again?
I'll go look it up.
Because there's a lot of SEC teams that are still ranked in the AP poll and they haven't played a game yet. A lot of the other conferences have already played. So what's the difference there? If we announce we're back, you better throw us back in the top 25, man.
Let's see if Ohio State is in the latest one.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about that. The listener said that and it made me chuckle. I was wondering, people, you know, SEC fans are going to be ticked if you get like Big Ten teams haven't played in 3 weeks and are still sitting above you in the rankings.
Well, I'm also pretty confident in saying, despite the SEC. Okay, here we go.
I'm looking at the AP poll. I don't see Ohio
State's
in there.
Still not in. So they were in it, and then when it was announced, everybody else was coming back. Yeah. Or no, they're in the coaches poll.
They're in the coaches poll, 10. But not the AP poll.
Yeah, but so, they were ranked. They were not ranked the week before. There's an NR next to them.
Right, I love it, man. It cracks me up. I hadn't thought about
that. Look at the rankings here: ACC, SEC, Big 12, SEC, SEC, SEC. ACC/independent, SEC. I mean, it's just covered in SEC.
In the top 10 in the coaches poll, 6 of the 10 teams haven't played a game yet.
Yep.
It just kind of sums up where we're at. So we'll wait. There'll be a decision tonight. Keep an eye on that one for the Pac-12. Keep it here with Isaac Atsouk this evening.
You know, and I know why they do the rankings, how they do them. I've always believed LSU or whoever the defending champ is, you start at number one.
You should always stay number one.
No matter what, until you lose.
That's how somebody dethrones you. You got to beat the champ to be the champ.
Yep.
I'm with you on that one. Miami, Jacksonville tonight. Jacksonville field goal favorite. How we feeling? Where are we going?
This one actually makes me a little more nervous now that I know their injury situation. Their starting center, kicker, and DJ Chark are out.
Yeah.
I still think I'm going to ride the Jag train, baby.
Okay.
Jags -3.
Yeah, I like Jag. It's only a field goal.
Why not?
I'll risk the push.
Yeah.
I'll take the Jags.
You going dog?
Yeah, went up.
Yeah, go Finns. Finn up.
Let's bark it, baby.
Well, I don't think you bark it.
I'm going to bark it. I'm going to bark like a dolphin tonight.
I think you do whatever you do, whatever that sound is called.
You want that sound?
A dolphin call.
good little show. If you missed any of it, Let's Drop Tires podcast, 1080thefan.com is where you can find it. Went to Colorado and Jacksonville on the Daily Ticker. We had Sam Monson on, a Pro Football Focus. Great stuff from him on the NFL. We'll tweet it out at Thurton Sprague and at 1080thefan. Enjoy Thursday Night Football tonight. Enjoy Game 4 of the Western Conference Finals. We'll keep an eye on the Pac-12 decision, and we will talk to you tomorrow at noon. Number one's next, listening to 1080 The Fan. Oh, yeah. Get it from the main line. All right. I said I find it,
love and love it if you like it, yeah. T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours.
And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.